This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This week on Case Closed, our hour of crime stories begins with Rocky Jordan. His episode from July 17th, 1949, titled The Race. Then it's Sherlock Holmes and Murder by Moonlight, an episode of his from 1945.
Time now for Rocky Jordan. Not far from the Mosque Sultan Hassan in Cairo stands the Café Tambourine, run by Rocky Jordan. The Café Tambourine, crowded with forgotten men, alive with the babble of many languages. For this is Cairo, where modern adventure and intrigue unfold against a backdrop of antiquity. Tonight's story, The Race.
I was sitting in my office at the Tambourine, trying to beat the terrific afternoon heat. Like everyone else in the cafe, I was too shot to even raise a finger. Then in came this girl. She startled me a little because she darted in and out of the tables in high gear, like she was searching for someone. When she began yakking at Chris, my bartender, my curiosity got the best of me. Someone jumping up and down in this heat deserved attention. As I walked over, I noticed she was nice-looking in a quiet sort of way. In spite of the fact, she looked as if any moment she might spring right through the ceiling.
But he has been here, hasn't he?
I haven't seen him all day.
What's up, Chris?
Oh, Rocky. This...
I've got to find Abdullah, Ben Abdullah. They said he was up here at the Tambourine.
You know, Ben Abdullah. He owns that little pawn shop up on the corner.
Yeah, sure, I know.
It's very important. There isn't time to explain. Just tell me where I can find him, please. Every second counts.
Well, I haven't seen him all day.
I tried to tell her,
Do you know where he is, then?
He could be one of a thousand places.
Why don't you try the pawn
He's
shop?
He's got a sign hanging on the door, out to lunch. A wad of end of the corner said he'd be up here. It's desperate, don't you see?
No, I don't.
If I don't get into that store in the next few minutes, there isn't going to be anything left of this whole block.
Maybe the heat's got her, Rocky.
It's too late to look for him. If I could just get into his shop.
Hey, take it easy, lady. Oh, that won't get a thing accomplished. Now, come on, tell me what it's all about.
I'm afraid it's even too late now to break into his shop. I wouldn't even know where to look for it.
Look for what?
A high-powered explosive.
A what?
A bomb. It's in the pawn shop.
Bomb?
She's nuts.
Maybe you'd better start from the beginning.
There's not time to explain. It will be going off in a few minutes. What we better do is clear the entire area before everyone is killed.
Sunstroke, if you ask me.
Chris, I don't know whether she's loony or...
Don't stand there! Tell everyone to clear the streets! They'll listen to you, not me!
Look, lady, I don't like to have my leg pulled.
Every second counts now. Please, believe me. Anyone within 100 yards of the pawn shop is in danger.
Okay, okay. Chris, we better play it safe. Call the fire department, the police, and what have you. There's a bomb going off. I think. Well, maybe Chris was right. Maybe the dame had got too much sun and blown her top. But who could take chances on a bomb going off? I dashed down the street like a poor man's Mel Patton, and in what must have been the world's record, the block was completely empty. The girl had tagged right along with me. And once the block was cleared, we made a run for the safety zone where the crowd had formed, 100 yards away. When we were about 60 yards from it, the girl began to tug at my arm and scream wildly at me.
Don't! Don't! It's too late to run any further!
What?
Don't! Fall on your face, quick!
I'd fallen flat on my face and curled up like a clam. Outside of my eardrums almost breaking in a torn pair of pants... I was in pretty fair shape. After the thunder stopped, I looked back down the street. There was a black hole that was once Ben Abdullah's pawn shop. None of the shops on the block got off easy. As for the Tambourine, there wasn't a window left in it. I turned to congratulate the girl on her king-size bomb, but she was nowhere in sight. It was the sweetest job of vanishing into thin air I'd seen in some time. I started to get to my feet, when I noticed that where the girl had been lying was a crumpled pawn ticket. As I picked it up, a pair of familiar feet stopped in front of me. I looked up in the face of Captain Sam Sabaya of the Cairo Police Force and his erstwhile shadow, Greco.
Hi, Sam.
Your bartender called us.
Give me a hand up. Thanks. Well, Sam, just goes to show you. Never underrate a woman.
Your bartender explained the entire proceedings. Where is she?
Looks like she took a powder.
You mean?
I do.
If I may say so, my captain, it sounds too rehearsed.
Good old Greco. I hate to disappoint you, but I never saw the girl before in my life.
Jordan, did she give you any hint as to what was behind the explosion?
Nothing. This pawn ticket might help. I'm sure it was hers. She must have dropped it when she fell to the ground.
I will take it. Thank you, Jordan.
Should have her name and address on it.
It has a name and address, all right. Only it's a man's name. Rollo Bendata.
Well, it's one on me.
Rocky, you're wanted on the telephone.
Oh, all right, Chris. I'll be right there.
I want to ask you some more questions, Rocky.
Check with me in the tambourine, Sam. You won't have any trouble finding it. It's the only building in the block in one piece. I hurried back to my office and picked up the phone. From the other end of the wire came the voice of my late friend, the young lady whose specialty seemed to be high-powered explosives.
Mr. Jordan, I'm sorry I had to run out on you.
Well, so am I.
You must understand, I couldn't face the police.
Where are you now?
I won't waste words. I'm in terrible trouble. I need your help. I'll pay anything for it.
Well, you can pay for the broken windows and the tambourine.
Anything. Will you help me?
I'm afraid tossing bombs is a little out of my line.
Believe me, I'm not asking for myself. It's for hundreds of innocent people who may be harmed.
You know, I could back that line with hearts and flowers.
Mr. Jordan, if I weren't on the level, would I have warned you about the explosive in the pawn shop?
All right. You tell me and I'll listen.
I can't over the telephone. I'll give you an address where you can meet me.
Okay. But look, lady, I'm leaving word with my bartender where I'm going, just in case you got more bombs up your sleeve. She gave me an address that was on the edge of Cairo. As I hung up, I saw Sabaya and Greco coming in the front door, so I took off the back way. I took a taxi and we drove for an hour. The address turned out to be a small house set 1 mile out in the desert. I paid off the hack, went up and knocked on the door.
Are you alone?
Yeah. You couldn't have picked a closer place.
I'm sorry, but I live here. Come in.
Looks more like a laboratory to me.
It is. I'm an explosives chemist. I live in the back.
Dangerous address.
I'd better introduce myself. I'm Suzanne Durand. Won't you sit down?
No, thanks. Not on a keg of dynamite. And stop jumping up and down.
I can't help it. We only have 11 hours left.
Hey, look, I've had enough riddles for one day. What's this all about?
I'll start from the beginning.
It would help.
A man by the name of Negri Sear hired me to develop a time bomb that would have a 24-hour action delay.
Why?
He heads a combine that wants to blast for water in the desert.
What?
You can imagine what it would mean if you could bring an incessant water supply to Cairo.
Well, sure, but why not a regular time bomb or dynamite?
He wanted an explosive that would need no wiring so that his company wouldn't attract attention.
Why all the secrecy?
Why, it's like digging for gold. He thinks he's found a spot where there might be water, and he doesn't want anyone to know till he staked his claim.
I think he's crazy. Where does the pawn shop come in?
I made two bombs, which I was going to test today. I was afraid my servant might accidentally spoil them, so I hid them in the base of an old clock. I went shopping, and when I came back, the clock was gone. The servant must have needed money, so he stole the clock, never realizing the bombs were in there, and pawned it.
Is your servant's name Rollo Bendata?
Yes. How did you know?
You left his pawn ticket on the street. It looks to me like Rollo's in trouble, not you.
Only one of the bombs went off in the pawn shop. Well, don't you see? The other one will go off.
You mean we're going to have to go through that all again?
The bombs were set to go off at different times.
But the blast of one could have exploded the second one.
Yes, but you only heard one explosion, didn't you? Only one exploded, Mr. Jordan. I could tell by the force.
Well, maybe Rollo's got the other bomb.
I've already talked to him. He swears he knows nothing about them.
Oh, fine.
I don't know where to look for it, and according to my calculations, the bomb should go off in 10 hours and 46 minutes.
Well,
What's this bomb look like?
A small object made of lead with a screw arrangement. When it's screwed down, the process begins. Two liquids, one eats through the separation and...
Oh, I get it.
Hundreds of people will be killed.
Look, if you want me to help, you got to promise me one thing.
Name it.
Stop jumping up and down.
I promise.
This guy, Negri Sear, you mentioned. You know where he lives?
Yes.
Come on, let's pay him a visit.
I'll call a taxi.
You're bouncing up and down again.
I'm sorry.
Now relax, will you? We've still got 10 hours and 46 minutes.
10 hours and 44 minutes.
We taxied across town to Negri Sears' apartment house. Negri let us in. He was the oddest little guy I'd ever laid eyes on. Short and skinny, but he had a huge head that should have gone with the body of a giant. He looked so top-heavy, I had to control myself from wanting to hold him up so he wouldn't topple over. His apartment was cluttered with bric-a-brac and large packing cases. The latter, I gathered, must have had something to do with his water project. When Suzanne told him about the bomb, he got quite irked, to say the least.
Really, my dear, I don't know what you expect me to do if you've lost one of your ghastly bombs.
Well, coming here was my idea.
And just who are you, Jordan? Suzanne, who is this man?
He's trying to help me.
You didn't tell him, I hope.
I'm afraid I had to.
You were sworn to secrecy. How could you? Well, Jordan, you'll never find out where I hope to get water.
I'm not interested in your plan for digging water. I'm only trying to locate the bomb.
Oh, this is dreadful. It will be all over Cairo. Everyone will be digging for water.
No one outside of this room will know. Besides, you're the only one who knows the locale where the water might be.
Huh? So you're going to blackmail me, huh? Or maybe you're going to torture me till I tell you the exact spot.
Look, for the last time...
What will my partners think? I will tell you nothing.
Rocky, we can't afford to waste all this time.
Look, Negri, if you'll just answer a few questions.
Never.
Were you out at Suzanne's place this afternoon?
Yes, but she wasn't home, so I left.
I was probably tracking down Rollo.
What time were you out there?
Our appointment was for 2. I'm always on time.
Did you see anyone or notice anything that might help us?
No. Is that clear?
Very.
There are only 8 hours left, Rocky. What are we going to do?
All right, hang on to yourself.
Suzanne, I want you to take this man out of here right away, or I'll call the police.
We're going.
So help me, I warn you. You'll never find out where I'm going to get water. Never.
What I'm wondering is if we'll ever find out where to find that other bomb. Ever.
You are listening to The Race, tonight's adventure with Rocky Jordan. May we suggest that you vary your CBS listening. Education is one of the most important phases of life today. Starting Monday, tomorrow night, Harvard University's President James Bryant Conant will discuss America's free public school system in a series of 5 talks each evening next week. As a thinking citizen, you'll find this series informative and important. So find out when the CBS program You and Education will be heard over your local CBS station and tune in. We think it will be well worth your while. Now we take you back to Cairo and tonight's adventure with Rocky Jordan, The Race.
It all began when a dame chemist named Suzanne Duran mixed up a couple of bombs for a character called Negri Sear, who had himself a great scheme. He was going to blast for water in the Sahara and make Egypt a garden spot. That sounded sort of screwy, but the noise of one of those bombs exploding sounded anything but. Well, that took care of one, but there was still another bomb someplace in the Near East, and Suzanne figured it'd go off in 8 hours. Where was it? You tell me. Negri Sear couldn't. We asked him. Well, when we came out on the street, Suzanne was hopping up and down again and on the verge of tears. And she looked at me as though I could supply all the answers.
Mr. Jordan, there must be something we can do.
Do you know where the office of the Cairo Mail is?
Yes.
Good. Now listen. And stop jiggling.
We have a plan then?
Maybe. We're going to have to split up to save time.
All right.
I'll get out of the newspaper office and ask for Ed Stack. He's a friend of mine. Give him a description of the bomb.
What else?
That's all. You'll get out an extra and see that it's broadcast, too. That way, everyone will be warned and on the lookout.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And when you finish there, go to the tambourine and wait for me.
Where are you going?
Where can I find Rollo?
Native Quarters, number 6, Oakar Street.
Check.
Rocky, I
look,
I don't...
will you stop worrying? It's going to be okay. Take my word for it. Yeah, it was going to be okay, sure. Only I wish I could have believed it. I was stymied from ear to ear. I put Suzanne in a taxi, and she was whisked off toward the newspaper office. I wanted to cross the street to get a taxi myself when up roared Sam Sabaya, taking the corner on two wheels.
Jordan!
Well, this is a coincidence, Sam.
I traced you through this taxi company. Where's the girl?
On her way to the newspaper office.
Rocky, I'm losing my patience. You said you did not know the girl. When I finally traced her, I learned she has been with you.
Sam, hang on to your brass badge. Got something to tell you.
Well, Jordan, I'm waiting.
She's working for a character named Negri Sear.
Negri Sear? Hmm. Yes, I've heard something of him. He's a dealer in fine art, a collector and such.
Fine art, huh? Well, he's got a sideline.
What do you mean?
The girl's a chemist. He hired her to make a couple of tickless bombs to blast for water in the Sahara.
Jordan, are you serious?
So help me, Sam. That's a story I got.
Blast for water in the Sahara?
Shh. It's a secret.
Jordan, this is not an amusing matter. Water in this part of the world is nothing to laugh at. There are those in these desert lands who make of it a religion. Yet is it possible to blast for water in the Sahara?
Negri Sear thinks so. Or so he says.
What could be done to all this arid land? Jordan, is this a trick?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Then I am inclined to think it is.
Well, the bomb was real enough.
Yes, yes, of course. We must make every effort to locate the other... But still...
Yes, eh?
Jordan, if that girl is not at the newspaper office as you say, I'm going to hold you responsible for aiding her escape.
Sam took off, and I checked the time and shuddered. Then I headed for the home of Rollo Bendata, Suzanne's servant, for my talk with him. I knocked hopefully on his door. No one answered, so I tried the door. It was open. The room was kind of dark. I took a few steps and stumbled. I didn't have to look twice to know I'd stumbled over a body. And the body was real dead. That's when a door slammed behind me. I wheeled around and right into a native holding a gun.
Your hands in the air, Fender.
Hey, what is this?
You'll kill my brother Rollo, yes?
Rollo?
Why you kill him?
You're making a mistake, buddy.
No, no, you kill him, you despised Westerner. I told Rollo to keep away from
you. Stop waving that gun around.
First working for the despised Effendi with a big head. Now this. I'll kill you to avenge his death.
I dove on him as he fired. The shots went wild. We rolled around for a while, fighting for the gun. Then I pulled away and caught him with a hard right. He dropped to the floor. Well, there was no sense in hanging around with one of my hosts in the refrigerator and the other in the deep freeze. So Rollo was really working for Negri Sear. I raced up the street till I came to a public telephone and called the tambourine. I wanted to tell Suzanne what I found out about her servant.
Tambourine.
Chris, this is Rocky.
Boy, I'm glad you called. Sabaya just left.
Oh, what's up?
He missed the girl again, and he thinks you gave him the business.
Well, that's why I'm calling. Where is she?
She was only here a minute, then left with some guy.
Who?
I don't know. He was a little guy with the biggest head.
Negri Sear.
What's going on, Rock?
It beats me. But there's a noise that's going to rock Cairo in a couple of hours. And I got a feeling Sabaya's going to be looking at me. Well, there were a lot of lies in it someplace. I raced for Negri's apartment. The place was deserted. Negri was gone. Suzanne wasn't there, but neither were the packing cases that belonged to Negri Sear. That took me to the railroad station double time. I pushed through the crowd till I came to the gates for departing trains. Waiting in one of the lines was Negri Sear.
Jordan, what are you doing here?
Looking for you. You better step out of line.
Do not be too hasty, Jordan.
Come on, out of the line before I drag you.
Dear fellow, let us talk this over where no one may overhear us.
All right.
Over into this corner.
There. Now,
you listen. I'm going to do the talking.
But, my dear fellow, I assure
you... Where's Suzanne?
But how should I know? I know. You're still trying to trick me into revealing secrets.
Close
that
it.
Will...
Rollo Bendetta, Suzanne's servant, was working for you. That means he took those bombs from Suzanne's place purposely, on your orders. That means also he hocked one bomb, the one on the clock, at that pawn shop on your orders, too.
Lies! Lies! Deceitful man!
All right. One bomb hocked. One bomb still on the loose. All on purpose, too, Negri. You figured if one went off, Suzanne would think both of them went off. Meanwhile, you'd have one to toy with.
Go ahead. Persecute me. Persecute me if you wish.
Ah, come off it.
So what if I say you are right? What then?
So the bomb's going to explode in an hour and a half. I'll make your head ring until you tell me where it is.
That would never succeed. I will never tell you. I will never tell you where the bomb is or why I have placed it there.
That water blasting's a phony deal.
Indeed.
I bet your packing cases will give me some answer.
I am the only one who knows the whereabouts of the bomb, and I will not tell. I will not tell unless...
What's the deal?
Allow me to leave Cairo. Allow me to leave Cairo, and I shall reveal the...
Either one of them.
Well, Greco.
Jordan, you have trapped me. You have deliberately led the police to me.
Come, the both of you, to police headquarters.
Put away that gun, Greco. You're attracting attention.
Come, I say.
No! You will not capture me. You will not take me, indeed.
Don't shoot, Greco. Don't shoot him. He's the only one.
No!
Come on,
I told you, you will not take me, indeed.
You did it upright, Greco. He's dead.
I had no choice. He reached for a gun. Everybody, stand back!
You'll probably get a promotion for this.
It was me or he. I had no choice. Attention, everyone! Stand back! Now, Jordan. Jordan! Jordan! Where are you?
I dove into the crowd and got lost. Well, I was free of Greco, but I was right back where I started. I checked the time again. In an hour and 10 minutes, that bomb would go off. And the only man who knew where it was dead. Well, I mulled the whole thing over for a while. All that was left were those packing cases of Negri's. It took me 10 minutes to find them. They were being loaded into a baggage car at the end of the line. I hurried up to one of the native porters and tried to con him. Oh, look, I want to check my baggage to see if I forgot anything.
Yes, Effendi. Which are yours?
Yeah, those packing cases over there.
Yes, Effendi. Your luggage checks?
Luggage checks?
I cannot let you look into the cases without them.
I left them with my wife.
Oh, sorry, Effendi, but I cannot do it. It is against the regulations, and I cannot...
I didn't want to hit him, but who had time to argue or explain? I began ripping into the packing cases marked fragile. The first case had some figures carved in marble and some pictures, but they didn't ring any bells. It wasn't until I got inside the second case that I saw the light. It contained a green jade vase that I knew I'd seen before. And right then and there, Negri's whole deal became clear. I knew where the bomb was and why. I scrambled out to the street. When I looked at my watch, I broke out in a cold sweat. It was less than an hour, 50 minutes to be exact. I dashed up to a taxi and shook the sleeping driver. Wake up, will you? Come on. Palace of Fine Arts. Come on, let's go. Look, money. Maybe this will wake you up.
The night is so hot, Effendi, for such energy.
This dough, all of it's yours, you understand? Only you got to step on it.
I will try. Well,
the Palace of Fine Arts.
It is closed at this hour.
I know it's closed. Let me worry about that.
Yes, Effendi. Get in. It is too hot to worry.
Can't you go any faster than this?
In this weather, the motor gets hot.
Well, excuse me. I didn't mean to keep you awake. Between yawns, we lumbered along, and it was 20 minutes later before we pulled up in front of the Palace of Fine Arts. I threw the money at the driver, raced up the tier of steps that led to the entrance. The joint was dark, but I saw a woman waiting in the shadows of the doorway. Suzanne!
Rocky, is that you?
Yes.
I was beginning to get worried. Negri said you had located the bomb and instructed me to meet you here.
Well, double talk. Now, don't start jumping. The bomb is in this building.
But Negri said that...
Never mind, Negri. I'll explain later. We've only got a few minutes.
This building covers a square block.
There must be a guard around.
Inside.
Look, start screaming. I'll bang on the door.
Help! Open the door! Help, please! Help!
All right, that's enough. Here he comes. I said that's enough. Stop it! Sorry, I had to hit you.
It's all right, my nerves. I couldn't stop.
Oh, here's the guard. Oh, open up. We got to get inside. There's a bomb in there.
Go away. We are closed.
Open up. There's a bomb in there.
It is after hours. Can you not read?
He can't hear you.
I stand back. I'm going to smash the glass with my foot. Yeah.
He's got a gun.
You are under arrest.
For the last time, there's a bomb in here.
What are you saying?
Someone has planted a bomb here.
It's going to go off in about 11 minutes.
You mean the bomb they have been talking about over the radio?
Yes.
Come in.
Now that we're in, Rocky, what are we going to do?
Come on, follow me. Look out.
There's a million places to look.
All right, here. Here's a jade room. Come on. Yeah, over there, that green jade vase. It's the same as the one Negri had in the packing case. Yeah, wait a minute. I'll fish down into it. There. Well, here's your bomb.
That's it.
All right, do something to it, Suzanne.
Loosen the screw, then pour off the top liquid. Uh-huh. It won't go off now.
Oh, where's the guard?
Back there. He fainted. I guess he couldn't.
Suzanne, this is no time to leave me standing here alone. Well, that was about it. Negri had himself a fine little deal. The water blasting, of course, was phony. That was just his way of getting Suzanne to make a couple of bombs, tickless ones. The first explosion was to make it seem as though both bombs went off. But the live one that Negri kept, he planted in the Palace of Fine Arts to cover up his robbery. Negri was to walk off with a lot of priceless art objects, leave some phonies in its stead, then blow up part of the building so that no one would ever know the real art object had been taken. And the tickless bomb was necessary so that it wouldn't attract attention, sitting there real quietly in the green jade vase. Yeah, art can be a pretty interesting subject, I guess. I'll never forget the life class I once took when I was a kid. Funny thing about it, though, it was a pretty fascinating class, but somehow I can't remember that I ever had any time in it for painting.
It's CBS again at this same time next week for another story of adventure and intrigue when we take you back to Cairo and the Cafe Tambourine run by Rocky Jordan. Just another reminder to all our CBS listeners, You and Education, a series of five talks, begins Monday and will be heard each night next week on your local Columbia station. Consult your newspaper for the broadcast time. You and Education brings you the views of a distinguished American, James Bryant Conant, president of Harvard University, in a discussion of the free public school system. Be sure to listen to CBS for You and Education. Rocky Jordan, starring Jack Moyles in the title role, is produced by Cliff Howell and directed tonight by Gordon T. Hughes. Original music was by Richard Arant and conducted by Ivan Dittmars. Tonight's story by Bernard Girard was edited by Gomer Kuhl and Larry Roman. Larry Thor speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This episode from the life of Sherlock Holmes will be transmitted to our men and women overseas by shortwave and through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. So let's settle back comfortably and listen, and while you're getting settled, I'd like to know if you like seafood. And by seafood, I mean everything from, well, from broiled lobster to fried halibut. Because if you like seafood, any seafood, you'll love it together with Petri California Sauterne. Fish and Petri Sauterne were made for each other. No kidding. Boy, I'll never in my life forget a broiled brook trout on the plate in front of me and a glass of well-chilled Petri Sauterne right next to it. Mm. That fish and that Sauterne. Mm. Petri Sauterne has a pale golden color that's really good to look at. And as for taste, well, that Petri flavor is really something. Take my word for it and try it, won't you? Oh, and I'll tell you something else. Try that Petri Sauterne with chicken sometime. Look, I better stop before I get hungry all over again, but just remember this. The best friend a good meal ever had is a glass of Petri wine. And now let's keep our appointment with the good Dr. Watson. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Bartell. Come over here and join me by the fire.
I didn't think it was cold enough for a fire tonight, Doctor.
Oh, I suppose it isn't really, but there was one late, so I just couldn't resist putting a match to it.
Fire's a good accompaniment to storytelling anyway.
Yes, my boy, a fire and a glass of port. Care to join me in one?
Thanks, Doctor. So, you're going to tell us a sea story tonight.
Yes, Mr. Bartell, the whole adventure took place aboard a small steamer as it plowed through the stormy seas of the Indian Ocean. Here's your glass, my boy.
Thanks. And what were you and the great Sherlock Holmes doing on the Indian Ocean, may I ask?
On our way to Calcutta to solve the case of the vanishing elephant of Parbatipur.
Oh, yes, the story you told us a few weeks ago.
That's quite right, my boy. It's in the summer of 1894 that we left Liverpool aboard the steamship Lucifer. It wasn't a large ship, and as both the Mediterranean and the Red Sea proved somewhat, shall we say, unfriendly, I may tell you the first part of the voyage was quite unpleasant. In fact, until we left Aden, I'd spent most of the time in my cabin. I'm not much of a sailor, you know. However, as we headed eastward towards Colombo, the weather cleared up a bit, and I came on desk and joined home. I remember on the second night out of Aden, we paced the decks together. The stars above us twinkled, the promise of a bright tomorrow. And the faint tinkle of a piano being played in the passenger lounge formed a perfect setting for an evening stroll. Only seems like yesterday, Holmes said.
Watson, it's good to see you on your feet again.
Yes, it's good to be on them, Holmes. It's been a miserable trip for me so far.
The captain told me tonight that we can expect good weather between here and Kalavati, our next port of call.
I thought Colombo was the next stop. And where is Kalavati, whatever you call it? Anyway, I never heard of the place.
It's a tiny island in the Indian Ocean. It's a British protectorate. Those are the facts I was able to glean from the encyclopedia and the ship's library.
Did you ask the captain why we're stopping there?
No, I didn't. We're traveling incognito. I felt it wiser not to ask too many questions.
I find this incognito business something of a strain. Every time a steward calls me Mr. Hamish, I can't think who on earth he's talking to.
Ah, whereas I find myself answering to Mr. Mycroft almost automatically. By the way, old chap, now that you're going to mix with the ship's passengers, I suggest that you adopt a Scotch accent. It would seem more appropriate for Mr. Hamish, and I don't want anyone aboard to suspect our true identities.
Oh, I'll do my best, but I must say, Holmes, I think you're being unnecessarily mysterious.
Possibly I've been influenced by reading too many of your rather florid stories of our adventures together.
My stories are not florid. They're all perfectly true.
Oh, don't be angry with me, old chap. Don't be angry, please. By the way, you'll be interested to know that I've unearthed a little mystery aboard this boat.
I trust you to do that. Where is she? I mean,
You observe that suite of cairns on the bridge deck above us?
Yeah? What about them?
Well, I've been watching them during my nightly strolls for the past 2 weeks. The suite is occupied and the blinds are never raised. But I've never seen meals taken in there. I presume, therefore, that it must contain a private galley and a cook.
I don't see anything mysterious about that. It's probably occupied by some wealthy invalid.
Oh, possibly. Another interesting fact is that the occupants are not entered on the ship's passenger list.
It all sounds very mysterious. There's probably a perfectly simple explanation, but in any case, you must save your energies for the problem that awaits us in India. You're Mr. Mycroft now, remember that.
I will, Mr. Hamish.
Mr. Mycroft?
Yes, Mr. Hamish?
Would you care to join me for a wee drop of brandy in the smoking room?
Mr. Hamish, I shall be delighted.
This is excellent brandy. Excellent.
Watson, you notice that rather garrulous gentleman over there in the corner?
You mean the one at the table with the oriental-looking fellow?
Yes, the talkative man is the ship's doctor, but I haven't seen the other gentleman before on this voyage.
I wonder if he's an occupant of the mysterious suite on the bridge deck.
Let's go over and talk to him, shall we? And remember the accent, Mr. Hamish.
And so, Verda, when we landed at Colombo, I decided to take Mrs. Abbott for a moonlight rickshaw drive from the cinnamon gardens. Did you gentlemen want to see me?
If you'll excuse us, Dr. Harris, my friend Mr. Hamish and I were having a little argument, and we thought that perhaps you might be able to settle it for
an
us.
An argument? Oh, I love a good argument. Sit down, gentlemen. This is Mr. Verder.
How do you do, gentlemen?
Good evening, sir. My name is Hamish, and this is my friend, Mr. Mycroft.
I'm so happy to meet you, gentlemen.
Now, how do you know, Mr. Verder?
Now, gentlemen, tell me what you're arguing about.
Well,
I
Doctor,
love a good argument.
You see, it wasn't exactly an argument. My friend Mr. Hamish insists that the Suez Canal was built by a Dutchman in 1870. I'm convinced that it was built by Lesseps, a Frenchman, in 1869. We thought you'd know.
You flatter me. I'm only a ship's doctor, not an historian. Ask Birdie. He probably knows.
Can you settle the question for us, sir?
I can, Mr. Mycroft. You are almost correct. The canal was opened in 1869. Though its construction began 10 years previously. De Lesseps, a French engineer, was in charge of the operation. There is a statue of him in Port Said Harbor, built to commemorate his skill and enterprise.
Oh, I'm much obliged to you, Mr. Vera. Hamish, I think that I win my bet.
Mycroft, I'm afraid you do, if you're sure of your facts, Mr. Vera.
I'm sufficiently sure of them, Mr. Hamish, to venture a small wager myself.
No. I think I'll not make any more bets on the subject, thank you.
Well, gentlemen, if you will excuse me, I shall return to my cabin now.
Oh, don't go.
No, don't go, sir. You'll make us feel as if we'd driven you away.
Oh, not at all, Mr. Hamish. I enjoyed meeting you both, but I have some letters to write. Good evening, gentlemen.
He's a charming person.
Charming and extremely knowledgeable.
Bit of a bore, if you ask me. You two fellas enjoyed your trip?
I'm just beginning to. It takes a little time to get my sea legs, you know.
Dr. Harris, how long have you been on this ship?
4 years. This is my third trip east on the Lucifer.
Uh-huh.
Why?
Well, there's something that puzzles me on board this ship. I'm sure that you would explain it to me.
And what is it?
Well, the suite of cabins on the bridge deck. Who occupies them?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Aye, Doctor, we would, and that's why my friend asked you.
Well, I'll tell you. Though it's supposed to be a secret. But there'll be no harm in telling you now, for we're dropping anchor off the island of Cavarati in the morning. In that suite of rooms is the Rani of Cavarati herself. She has her own staff of servants and everything. What do you think of that?
Oh, how very interesting. And is the Oriental gentleman who left the table when we arrived part of our entourage?
He is, sir. He's the sort of prime minister of Cavarati. This whole trip there is very hush-hush. Rani returning to her country, afraid someone might make an attack on her life. Have to keep it all hush-hush. Cavarati is an island that's had a lot of trouble.
You seem to be remarkably well informed about the place, sir.
Yeah, I should be. I used to practice there in my younger days.
Really, how very interesting.
Yes, I could tell you strange tales about the island. I remember... Oh, hello. See that fella coming into the lounge?
You mean the big man with the grey hair?
Yes. That's Sir Christopher Wyatt. Owns all the tea plantations on Cavarati. He's a dull fella, but I'll call him over. Wyatt, come over and join us. Be careful. You'll talk your head off if you give him half a chance. Draw up a chair, Wyatt. We were just talking about Cavarati.
It seems to me that would be a good subject to keep away from. At least till after tomorrow, Harris.
What do you mean?
You know perfectly well what I mean. I should have thought that after your own experience on Cavarati, you'd have learned a little discretion.
You're talking like a schoolmaster, Wyatt. Why don't you just sit down and have a drink and be friendly?
Thank you. I prefer my own company.
Pompous ass.
You and Sir Christopher don't seem on the best of terms, Doctor.
I know too much about him. He's afraid of me. That's what he is.
Look at this girl coming into the room. Great Scott, she's good looking.
Judging by our oriental costume, she must be a member of the Rani's retinue.
She's coming to our table. Yes, my dear, what is it?
Which of you gentlemen is Mr. Mycroft, please?
I am.
My mistress sends her compliments and asks that you will call on her in her suite.
And who is your mistress, may I ask?
Her Highness, the Rani of Cavarotti.
Oh, I shall be delighted. Please tell the Rani that I shall pay my respects without delay. We will join her in a few minutes.
Very well, Mr. Mycroft.
You know, Holmes, this is pretty exciting. The girl that just brought us the message was a stunning creature. Imagine what the Rani herself must be like.
Oh, what an incurable romanticist you are, Watson. I suppose you picture the Rani clad in oriental splendor, reclining like an odalisk on silken cushions.
No, 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 there's no need to make fun of me, old fellow.
Here we are at the cabin.
Ah, it is you, gentlemen. Follow me, please.
Come in.
Her Highness, the Rani of Cavarotti.
All right, Regina, you can off it.
Yes, Your Highness.
Well, me lads, don't look so startled. Come in and sit down.
Your Highness, I...
What's the matter? What's the matter? Don't I fit into your picture of a Rani? What did you expect? A slant-eyed beauty with a veil and big hips? Well, I've got the big hips, all right.
Your Highness...
Your Highness. Sit yourselves down and talk free and easy-like. I may as well begin by telling you that I know who you both are. Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
Dear me.
I've seen you in the good old days in London, you know.
May I ask if our visit is purely a social one, or are you in need of professional advice?
Oh, a little of both, Mr. Holmes, a little of both. And we'll start off with being social. Bruma.
Mem Sahib.
Champagne.
Botachi, Mem Sahib.
If you'll pardon my asking you, madam, but haven't I seen you before somewhere?
Oh, that's a question I always haven't answered. Yes, you probably have, Dr. Watson. You see, I was in the chorus at Daly's Theatre in London for quite a few years, until the Roger of Cavarotti decided I'd look better on his island than I did in front of the footlights.
Your husband, the Roger, is dead, isn't he?
Yes, he was killed playing polo.
Champagne, ma'am, sahib.
Polo. Champagne, for the sector.
Atcha.
He doesn't speak English, so I'll get along with telling you my troubles. Mr. Holmes, somebody's trying to kill me.
Kill you? It's good.
May I ask what reason you have for saying that, madam?
You may, Mr. Holmes. Before I left England, I had threatening letters warning me that if I ever went back to Cavarotti, I'd never get to the island alive. I got another letter in Port Said that said the same thing.
You kept these letters, I trust?
No, I didn't. I tore them up. I never did pay any attention to letters that weren't signed.
Well, that's a great pity, madam. Those letters might have been invaluable.
Well, it's too late to think about that now, Dr. Watson. Here's what's on my mind. I land at Cavarotti in the morning, and if anyone's up to a bit of no good... Tonight's their last chance.
You destroyed the threatening letters, madam, thereby indicating you did not believe in the threats, and yet you now appear to feel that you are in danger. I wonder what made you change your mind.
The Ace of Spades.
Yes, I understand you, madam.
In the last 2 days, every time I tell my fortune, I get the Ace of Spades. Now, you know what that means. Death.
Oh, come now, madam. If you'll pardon my saying so, that's a very childish superstition.
Well, the cards have never lied to me yet. Oh, you can laugh at it if you like, but I know.
Well, you mind if I ask you a few questions?
Anything you like, Mr. Holmes. Fire away.
How long is it since you were in Cavarotti?
About 18 months. We were in England when my husband died, and I couldn't face the idea of going to that island alone. In 3 months ago, Verda... Oh, he's the chief minister of Cavarotti.
Yes, madam. We met him for a moment in the lounge.
Verda came over to England to persuade me it was my duty as the Rani to go back.
I see. As far as you know, have you any enemies among the passengers on board the ship?
Oh, that's an odd one to answer, Mr. Holmes. But I can tell you right here in my suite there's someone who doesn't like me. The girl Raduna, the one that brought you my message. She was in love with the Roger herself. I know she hates me, even though she did stay with me in England after my husband died.
How about Ferda, your minister?
Oh, he's all right. My husband thought the world of him, and he's been wonderful to me.
He came from Cavarotti recently, you say, to persuade you to return there.
That's right, Mr. Holmes. Well... Bruma seems to be all right after drinking that champagne, so it'll be safe for us to have some now. Champagne on Logido?
Botachi, ma'am, sahib.
I've been burning with curiosity to know why you gave him a glass of champagne a few minutes ago, and yet we didn't have any.
Well, surely that's obvious, Watson. Bruma is the official poison taster, isn't he, madam?
That's right, Mr. Holmes. He tastes everything I eat or drink before I do. And if it doesn't affect him, then I know it's safe. Berta brought him over to England when he came to fetch me. On the island of Cavarati, poisoning's quite an arbor, you know.
There were two people in the smoking room tonight who seemed to know quite a lot about your island. The ship's doctor, a rather garrulous gentleman by the name of Harris, and Sir Christopher Wyatt, who owns tea plantations on the island. Do you know either of them, madam?
I should say I do, both of them. Dr. Harris isn't any good. He was on the island a bit, but got into some kind of trouble, and my husband had him thrown out.
And how about Sir Christopher Wyatt?
Oh, Chris is all right. I saw quite a bit of him in London after my husband's death. As a matter of fact, well, if I weren't going back to Cavarati, I don't think he'd be on the boat at all. He hasn't been there over 5 years, ever since he had a row with my husband over the wages he paid the native labor.
It seemed to me that several people aboard this boat have a personal interest in the island of Cavarati. Interests that might be influenced by your death.
Yes, that's what I was going to say, madam. I think we should keep an eye on you.
Oh, that's just what I was hoping you'd say, Doctor. You see, I'm giving a bit of a supper party tonight. All the people we've been talking about have been invited. And I thought if you two were to be here, perhaps you'd be on the lookout for any funny business. How about it?
Well, of course we'll come, won't we, Holmes?
I think it might be a good idea. Though I would suggest that we retain our incognitos as Mr. Hamish and Mr. Mycroft.
Whatever you say, Mr. Holmes. And now, let's have that champagne.
You know, Holmes, I remember the Raleigh when she was in the corset dailies. She looked stunning in tights. There was one night I...
Yes, no time, old chap, if you don't mind. At the moment, there's a question I want to ask you.
Oh, sir?
Is your metal bag fully equipped with all the antidotes to poison?
Poison? It's ridiculous. How could the Raleigh be poisoned when she has a poison taster?
My dear Watson, you mustn't...
Help!
What the blazes...
Come on, Watson. That cry came from the companionway.
There are two figures struggling by the rail there.
Good heavens! One of them has pushed the other down the companionway.
Ah! Good Lord. His skull smashed in. I'm afraid that he...
What's happened? Sir Christopher Wyatt. What are you doing here?
I was taking a stroll. I heard a yell from this direction and came here as fast as I could. Great Scott, this fellow's bleeding badly. We must get the ship's doctor.
It's hardly necessary, I fear, Sir Christopher.
What do you mean?
In the first place, this man is dead. In the second place, he is the ship's doctor.
We'll hear the rest of Dr. Watson's story in just a second, so I'm just going to ask you to do one thing for me. Well, I should say for yourself. Tomorrow night, if you're having meat or any meat dish for dinner, why not open up a bottle of Petri California Burgundy? That wonderful rich red Petri Burgundy will turn your dinner into a real feast. You see if it doesn't. Because there's nothing like a good wine with good food. And I know your family gets good food, and I know that Petri Burgundy is a good wine. In fact, it's a perfect mealtime wine. Try it and see. And now, Dr. Watson, tell us what happened next. You said you found the ship's doctor dead at the foot of the companionway?
Yes, Mr. Bartell. His neck had been broken instantly.
Imagine there was a good deal of excitement aboard.
No, my boy, as a matter of fact, there wasn't. We managed to get the body back to its cabin without attracting attention. Holmes, after revealing his true identity, was able to persuade the captain to hush up the killing until after the Raleigh's party had taken place.
Oh, he didn't want to scare the murderer, I guess. What happened next, Doctor?
Holmes and I returned to our cabin to dress for the party. Holmes, I remember, was in a state of suppressed excitement. He spoke quietly and deliberately.
Watson? Surely it's obvious why the doctor was murdered.
Well, it isn't obvious to me.
But it's elementary, my dear fellow. You're playing a subtle murder by poison. How wise to remove the one man who might save the victim's life, a doctor.
Oh, you keep harping on poisoning. It seems to me that it would be the last way a murderer would try to dispose of the Rani. Everything she touches is first tested by the poison tester.
Exactly. That's why I call it a subtle murder attempt. Didn't you notice the physical attributes of Prumer, the poison tester?
Which in particular, Holmes?
His unusually glossy hair, his remarkably clear complexion, his plump figure. Look here. Just tell me one thing, will you?
What's that?
I presume that in your medical bag you have a supply of magnesia.
Naturally.
Do you also have hydrated ferric oxide?
Yes, I do.
Splendid. And it's for your party.
Oh, funny things to take to a party, I must say.
That's true, my dear fellow, but I'm afraid that this party may not prove as convivial as the Rani thinks.
Holmes. It's nearly 1 in the morning. Everything seems to be going splendidly.
It seems to be, Watson, but keep your eyes on the Rani.
Yes, I have been. The poison test has tested everything that passed her lips. We don't endorse to you, Christopher. You're having a good time.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Mr. Hamish. How about you, Mr. Mycroft?
Oh, the Rani's a perfect hostess. Who could help having a good time?
I don't think that girl, Regina, should be here, though. I don't want to be pompous, but after all, she's only a glorified servant.
Oh, possibly the laws of etiquette are not so strict in Cavarati as they are in London, Sir Christopher.
Oh, perhaps you're right. But I don't trust the girl. Something's shifty about her. I've told the Rani more than once. Oh, well, I suppose it's none of my business. I think I'll try and persuade the Rani to sing one of her old songs.
He doesn't trust Raduna, and I don't trust him. I don't think it was an accident that we found him near the body of Dr. Harris.
Shh. Here comes Vera.
I trust you gentlemen are enjoying yourself.
Very much, Mr. Vera, thank you. I imagine you must be excited at the prospect of returning to Calabati.
I am, Mr. Mycroft. Though I only left it 3 months ago, it has seemed more like 3 years.
Do you ken what time we'll arrive there?
I am told that we shall be there in 5 hours, Mr. Hamish.
Oh, look. The Rani's at the piano. She must be going to give us a tune.
Yes, let's move a little closer, shall we?
Chris here has asked me to sing something. Well, my voice isn't what it used to be, and don't I know it. But me spirit's the same, and that's enough to put a number over. So, old time, boys, here we go. My sweetheart's the man in the moon. I'm going to marry him soon. 'Twould fill me with bliss just to give him one kiss, but I know that a dozen I never would miss. I'll go up in a great big... Oh...
Great Scott, she...
Quick, Watson, your medical bag. I'll lock the door.
Right, Holmes.
Bring some water, please.
Help me. Oh, please, help me.
What is the matter?
Don't be frightened, madam. I'll take care of you.
Thirsty. Give me water. Oh, such pain.
All the symptoms of arsenic poisoning. Now I know why Holmes asked me if I had any magnesia, ferric oxide.
Do something for me, doctor. I'm dying.
Don't worry, Your Highness. You're not going to die. She's going to live, Holmes. Ah, gracious me, I'm tired. It's touch and go there for a while, though.
Well done, Watson, old chap, well done.
Now that she's out of danger, why can't we all go back to our cabins? It's nearly dawn, and we've been locked in here since 1 o'clock. You've no right to do this, you know.
Possibly not, Sir Christopher, but there's a murderer in this cabin, and I don't intend to let him escape.
Mr. Holmes, what happened? How could I have been poisoned when Froomer tasted everything first? Why wasn't he poisoned?
For a very simple reason, Your Highness. The murderer has been conditioning Froomer for over a year.
What do you mean?
He's been feeding him gradually increasing doses of arsenic until he has finally become immune to the poison.
Great Scott, I never thought of that.
Froomer's glossy hair, his complexion, and stout figure are all typical of a person who consumes arsenic regularly.
But who could have done it?
Only one person had the opportunity.
Well, tell us who that person
is. No, not you, Sir Christopher, not you. For you haven't been on the island for years, whereas Froomer returned from Calabati but 3 months ago. Raduna has also been in London with her mistress for the past 18 months, remember? The answer is obvious.
You did it, Werther. You brought the taster over when you came to fetch me. You'd prepared him for the year beforehand.
Of course I did. No white runner will ever rule over Cavarati.
And you murdered Dr. Harris.
Equally true. Mr. Holmes, give me the key to the door, please. Oh, no.
What?
Do not come near me. Please throw it on the floor. Do not hesitate. You see this revolver? I should have no compunction in using it, I assure you.
How do you expect to escape, Vera?
The key, please. Thank you.
You'll never get away with this, Bertie, you devil.
But I shall. We are now in the harbor of Cavarati. I shall swim ashore and arrange your welcome, my dear Rene. Turn your backs, please. Turn them! Thank you. Goodbye.
He's gone.
Come on, Watson. After him. You have your revolver, Watson?
Yes, but I didn't get a chance to draw it. He had me covered.
Well, draw it now, old fellow. Aim for a leg or an arm and don't hesitate to shoot.
There he is, up on the lifeboat. He's climbing up on the rail.
Where is he? Where did he go?
Up there on the rail above us, madam.
He's going to dive.
Give me that revolver, Dr. Watson. Quick, that's it. Come down off there, Verger.
Hold. Medlin, keep out of my ears.
There he goes. He's dived.
Madam, you shot to kill.
Of course I did, Mr. Owens. Remember that we're now in Cavarotti waters, and that I, though I may not look like it at the moment, I am still the Ronnie of Cavarotti.
Say, that was a swell story, Doctor. Had a lot of color and quite a bit of action.
Color and a bit of action? Well, I'm glad you liked it, my boy.
Oh, I did. Say, you know, that's not a bad idea. I mean, having someone taste everything before you did.
Oh, it's a very old idea. Very old. Very common, too, years ago.
You know the kind of job I'd like?
No, what's that?
I'd like to be the official taster for the Petri family. Boy, just think of all the Petri wine I'd get to taste. Petri to the right of me. Petri to the left of me. What a life. What wine?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind having that job myself.
You said it. The Petri family, you know, really knows how to make good wine. They've been making wine for generations. And because they've always owned and operated their own business ever since it was started way back in the 1800s, well, the Petri family has sure piled up plenty of skill and experience. Yes, they've been handing down in the family from father to son, the fine art of turning luscious grapes into delicious wine. That's why you can't go wrong with any Petri wine. It must be good, because Petri took time to bring you good wine. Well, Doctor, what new story do you have lined up for us next week?
Next week, Mr. Bartell, I'm going to tell you an adventure that Sherlock Holmes and I had many years ago. It concerns a series of bonfires, an underground cellar full of gunpowder, and a strange death on the rooftops of London.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and was suggested by an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Adventure of the Mazarin Stone. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station. This is Harry Bartell saying goodnight for the Petri family. Sherlock Holmes comes to you from our Hollywood studio. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Case Closed returns next Wednesday with 60 more minutes of old-time radio crime stories. In between now and then, you can find past episodes of this show and more old-time radio at relicradio.com. There's also links there to our forum, Shoutcast stream, and everything else Relic Radio. I'd like to make sure the shows keep coming every week. Help support this and all the shows. You can do so from the website as well. So click on that donate button for more information on that. Thank you, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.